The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Stevie Nicol in the studio. We also welcome to the show Craig Burley is with us, as is Jan Arge Fjortoft. World Cup qualifiers, of course, dominating over the last 24 hours. We'll kick things off by focusing on Serbia's 2-2 draw against Portugal. Portugal 2-0 up at halftime. Serbia getting back to 2-2. But the big talking point, Craig, was that late effort from Cristiano Ronaldo and doubts whether or not it did cross the line. It wasn't given as a goal. Ronaldo furious.
Yeah, Serbia had just gone down to 10 men with the big centre-half had just been sent off, but that really was neither here nor there. I think there was like a minute left in the extra time, as you said. Long diagonal ball over the top of the defender. The angle was narrow. Keeper made a really poor decision to come out, misjudged it, and Ronaldo from a narrow, really narrow angle, as I said, took it first time, and it looked like the ball was trundling over the line. One of the Serbian defenders got back to hook it back. Now, it did, on the face of it, look over. I've just seen a couple of stills on Twitter, and when is Twitter ever wrong? I mean, but I've just seen, unless the angles are wrong from the pictures, it looked as if the whole ball was probably over. Of course, if we've got goal line technology, it'll take it down to millimetres. If there's a bit of the ball hovering over the line, it will not be given. But it did look as if it just managed to meander over. But of course, we don't have this technology, and we're talking about World Cup qualifiers here, and the technology's been around for a good couple of years now at least, and to not have it in the qualifiers, albeit when you put up an argument, well, we can't have it in Gibraltar or San Marino or wherever, I'm sorry, that just doesn't cut it, because it's too important. It's too important to go to a World Cup or not. That being said, Portugal had the game down in their hands. I mean, they really did. They're really attacking side with Fernandes behind Ronaldo, with Bernardo Silva on the right, and Diego Jota fit again on the left. Diego Jota, who seems to have an amazing knack of you know, ghosting into the penalty area for one so small and still managed to find enough space. So it was a really attacking Portuguese side that was controlling the game for long periods until the second half. And then they pretty much just imploded as Serbia got on the front foot and started to ask some more questions. So in the end, I mean, Fernando Santos was making defensive substitutions during this second half. Not until the end, when he brought on João Felix and somebody else, were they looking to win the game. They were bringing on Renato Sanchez, they were bringing on left backs. And so the tide really turned in this game, and it was a big surprise, because I thought Portugal really had Serbia where they wanted them, but it turned out they couldn't see this game out.
Yeah, and let's go back to that decision, shall we, for FIFA not to have VAR at these games. Today, a great example of why it's embarrassing, isn't it?
Yeah, not only embarrassing, is just think what a politics is all behind. This week or last week, there were all the numbers of FIFA. You saw how the wages of Infantino, maybe you can take some of them, and San Marino and Gibraltar would have at least goal line technology. And I think that maybe VAR is too much with all the cameras all around the world, but goal line technology, I can do that with my iPhone. And I can understand Cristiano Ronaldo is furious about that, because that ball was definitely over the line. And I think for FIFA, saying this is the best and the biggest tournament of the world, well, please, at least goal line technology. That is so 2014, isn't it?
It is. And what's weird is that, look, if VAR's there, then surely you can just use it for pretty much all the games. If you can't use it at some, I understand that because of technical reasons. But it's like you don't have the same standard of refereeing throughout the whole tournament. Some are good, some are bad. If you can use VAR, then why don't you use it?
Well, Dan, it's like everything else. You know, they're trying to make it out as though this is the greatest tournament on the planet. But guess what? If we can cut some corners and maybe save some money, then that'll go towards another trip for the boys. I mean, that's all it is about. The excuse that, well, we need to make this equal for everybody. So if Gibraltar don't have it, then while we're doing the qualifier, then nobody will have it. I mean, it's just, it's cutting corners at the very worst. That's all it is. Saving money. And listen, at the end of the day, this could cost Portugal a spot in the World Cup. That's how important it is.
You know, at the end of the day, Dan, the chances of something happening in a game at Gibraltar or San Marino are slim. I know we've saw Ireland losing at home to Luxembourg, but Ireland are atrocious. I mean, let's be frank. And so the chances of anything being close to scandalous at these games is in the main pretty slim, because these teams are getting turned over. So you really should be having it when you're sitting at the big table to go to the elite competition in the sport that we cover, which every player wants to go and play at. That being said, though, you know, up until that point, really, and the other side of this is Ronaldo was extremely poor in this game. He had that chance at the end, and I think that could be his frustration as well. The other side of the coin for Portugal is in these big games, and it was a tight game in the end, it didn't look like it was going to be, but it turned out to be. Is somebody's going to have to man up to this guy with free kicks? I mean, seriously, because he had a really great opportunity in the first half from 20 yards out, and Portugal arguably have one of the best free kick takers currently in Bruno Fernandes, right? Okay, he might be a little bit off form in his general play at Man United, but we know from set pieces he's been giving a masterclass in the last 12 months. But every time in the main when they see Ronaldo taking a free kick, we know the story, it hits the wall, generally it goes over. And yet, once again, we saw the guy who's the captain saying, it's my ball, nobody else gets involved. And I think, you know, for Portugal's perspective, they and Ronaldo himself have to be bigger than this, because there are going to be games where it's going to be tight, like this one, and it might come down to a set piece, free kick, corner kick, penalty kick, whatever. And there's no doubt for me that nobody in that Portuguese team has the stomach to say to him, listen, of all your great facets at the moment, free kicks is not the best of them. And we have somebody that can take better set pieces. And maybe if they do that and had done that, might have been a different outcome.
But Craig, not only set pieces, there wasn't really much for Ronaldo to get, for Ronaldo fans to get excited about today.
No, and it's pretty much everybody else that gets hauled off. You know, Bernardo Silva, Diego Jota. You know, whenever a change has been made and João Félix come on, it was never going to be Ronaldo. And maybe that's just Fernando Santos doesn't want to upset the apple cart, doesn't want to upset his leader. Little bit worried about the reaction, what the press might say, what he might say. But ultimately, when he's on the periphery of a game and it's a World Cup qualifier, then as a manager, you might have to make a decision. But the decision in today's game was that Ronaldo remained on the field, even though he never looked likely, apart from, I mean, he had that one at the end, which was like, you know, right at the death. There was one chance it came his way in the second half from a great cross, but he was half a yard offside, the flag went up. But yeah, he was on the periphery. The first half was being directed by Jota's run, by Bernardo Silva, and really he found it difficult, Ronaldo, to get into his stride and get into the game. But we know he's going to play, and we know he's unlikely to be taken off.
Go on, Jan.
Now, I'm just thinking of the point that Stevie made there, and I think it's quite interesting, because this is the tournament who likes to brand themselves as the biggest tournament in the world. I mean, I would say that is Champions League, because the best players in the world are in Champions League, and not always the best players are at the World Cup. But I think this also goes down to politics, because this is the FIFA kind of way to do it. You've got like 204 nations or something. Every nation, one vote. And this is like a compromise saying that you don't have to spend money on this. And I think they devaluate then the tournament itself. And I think that is no excuse for what we saw today. Because as Craig said, Portugal could be one of the outsiders coming into the World Cup. And Serbia, don't underestimate Serbia. Some good players there. And you saw that also among the goal scorers today with Mitrovic and Kostic, who is now having a great time at Eintracht Frankfurt.
Craig, you mentioned Ireland, of course, losing at home against Luxembourg. What on earth's going on?
Well, the politics of Irish football for quite a few years now have been pretty eye-opening, to say the least. With the changes that have been going on. But But, you know, the reintroduction of excuse me, Mick McCarthy, within, I think, was it, he had the job for a year, and then Stephen Kenny was going to get it. We know they don't have great players, but they've been turgid to watch now for a long time. And again, you know, this is a new low for them, you know, losing at home to little old Luxembourg, who were well organised and took their goal well. But they're an atrocious side, and Stephen Kenny is under immense pressure. I mean, he's hardly a manager with any great pedigree. And, you know, he's been around for a while in the Irish leagues. He had a little spell in Scotland at Dunfermline. It didn't work out from there. And he'll be getting absolutely hammered. But that's two straight losses at the start of this campaign for them. That's very difficult to come back from. But let's be frank, with performances like that, you're not going to grace a World Cup with a team playing like that. Let's be frank.
Craig Burley, as always, thank you very much. Just a reminder, ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow. More World Cup qualifiers for us to discuss.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
In Group E, Czech Republic 1, Belgium 1. The standout result, meaning that both teams level at the top of the table on 4 points apiece. Jan still with us is welcoming Gab and Jules to the show as well. Jules, Belgium hanging on in the end.
Yeah, it was tough. It was tough for them. I think they expected it to be tough because it's really hard to play against the Czech team. We saw with Slavia, for example, in the Europa League, how difficult it is to manage against them. They're very physical. They're very aggressive. They play with intensity. They've got some good little players. The team tonight had a lot of the core of that team is from the Slavia side as well. So they know each other so well. And it was really tough. They could have easily lost that game, Belgium. So I think Roberto Martinez will be very happy with the point.
The FIFA World Rankings, Gab, tell us that Belgium are the number one team in the world. They didn't look like it for much of today.
Yeah, look, I mean, you got to take the FIFA World Rankings with a whole gleaming salt lake.
All right, okay, all right. They're supposed to be one of the best teams in the world.
They haven't played football. I think the reality is they haven't played football, and none of these teams have. I think the Czech Republic showed that, you know, they can certainly hang with Belgium. And I think in a game like this, away from home, if you get a little bit physical, if you stay organized, you can certainly go and rattle a Belgium side that, don't forget, is filled with a bunch of players who've played a ton of minutes already this season.
Stevie, I know defensively you're worried about Belgium.
Well, I am, yeah. If you look at the back three that they played today, Alderweireld and Vertonghen, yes, are highly experienced, but they don't have any pace. Even at their best, they weren't particularly quick. And then in the middle of them is Debonair, who, quite frankly, I don't believe should be playing in this Belgium side. You know, the guy in the middle is supposed to be in charge of the back line. He's the one that organises everything. And then when things go wrong and he has to step out, he has to do that. He doesn't do any of those things, and he's actually not particularly great on the ball. So if you've got a back line, or certainly a back three, with no pace, and the man in charge isn't capable of doing that, and is not particularly good with the ball, I would suggest you're in a little bit of trouble when you come up against a real good side.
Jan, do you agree?
Yeah, but still, I just want to go back to the FIFA ranking there for a while. Yes, where my team in the 90s, we were second in the FIFA ranking. Oh. So please, Gab, stay away from the FIFA ranking. Thank you. I just want to say that. This was a quite decent game, I think. It was an intense game. I think the Czechs were a good team that maybe deserved to win today. What I as a striker love to see is that the way Lukaku, and you can say whatever you want about him, his strength and his weaknesses or whatever, his hold-up play is sensational. I think that I agree with Stevie, the defence is not that good for Belgium. With a De Bruyne and a Lukaku, there is always a chance to get goals. And even today, in a game where they didn't create that much still, there were potential for Lukaku and De Bruyne hitting the post as well to do it. And two great, great players. And I can understand that Lukaku is much wanted now coming up in this summer.
Gab, is he in the form of his life?
I mean, certainly so many things are working for him. And, you know, you can look at this and look at the goal he scored and be like, well, you know, De Bruyne put it on a plate for him. But he's just showing that everything's coming together. He's being used differently. I think the way Martinez has used him has always been the right way. You know, don't just use him as a target man, lumping balls to him. And you can find out how many more things he can do because he is one of the cleverest center forwards out there.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. More from the guys, by the way, on Extra Time. Be sure, as always, to check that out over on our YouTube channel. Oh, the Spanish newspapers are very excited about Erling Haaland. The front page of Sports going for Haaland War. Meanwhile, Marca, the Madrid-based newspaper, saying two stars, one destiny, Mbappe and Haaland going to Real Madrid. That would be quite something. As we discussed, obviously, on yesterday's show, an article over on the website talking about the fact that Dortmund have set Haaland a fee of 180 million euros. They won't listen to anything below that. Right, a lot to get through here. Jules, Gab and Jan are with us. Jan, let's start with you and that 180 million.
Yeah, I don't 100% agree with that. And there are two reasons I don't think it will be 180. First of all, there is a clause that everybody now more or less know is next summer. And why should it then 180 now? And then you have the market, all the clubs doing losses. And see Barcelona, for example, they make a result this year of like a billion, trillion euros in minus. And the first thing the president elected says that we're going to buy Haaland. And I mean, this is the bad thing about these membership-owned clubs, because a guy like Laporta just comes in, he gets elected, and then he will spend all the money in the world, and it just leaves. Yep. So there's not only advantages with this membership kind of thing, because he doesn't have to pay it. He can just promise it, we're going to keep Messi, we're going to get Haaland, and billion, trillion in minus. I mean, that doesn't hold up. So I think that the 180 is too much. And I think it's more likely that it won't be sold. But I guess we're going to discuss that more later.
Let's, Jules, go to that Marca headline. Two stars, one destiny, Mbappe and Haaland. There's no way that is happening, is it?
Impossible.
Right.
I mean, this would cost them between the wages, the transfer fees, the agent commissions, everything that goes into a transfer. Getting them to this summer is half a billion euros.
Right
now, they don't have that money. They don't even have half of that money. So unless they sell their whole squad and they plan to play 2v11 every game, maybe three, okay, they keep Courtois and then the rest of the team is Mbappe and Haaland defending in midfield and attacking. They just can't afford them. It's impossible to buy them both. It's even bad to write it.
Well, it'll sell newspapers, Jules. You should be used to that. Gab, taking a look at this from an economic perspective, there must be a suggestion that Haaland could just wait until next year when there are fans in, when obviously clubs have more money and everything has kind of passed over a little bit from the pandemic, as opposed to jumping the gun now?
No question about it. I mean, the only thing that could change it is obviously if Borussia Dortmund don't qualify for the Champions League and all of a sudden they find that they have a big hole. But from a purely what is best for Haaland perspective and what is best for Mino Raiola, his agent perspective, it's pretty simple. When we talk about transfers, you have to shell out a big wad of money. You have to pay for the transfer fee. You have to pay for the player's wages, and you have to pay the agent commissions. All that money comes out of the same pot. If he moves this summer, if it's not 180 million, it's 150 million, 120 million, whatever it is, if he moves that this summer, the fee will be substantially higher than it will be the summer after, when it's going to be 75 million. We know that the transfer clause will kick in, and it's going to come down to that. at that point, if you're paying $75 million for the transfer fee, you've got more money to spend on Holland's wages and on Mino Raiola's commission. So if you're Mino Raiola or you're Erling Haaland, there's no reason for you to move now. It's much better for you to move a year from now, where you can create an auction between potential bidders. You can get the best possible deal for you, for yourself, both financially and from a sporting perspective. So unless something changes all of a sudden, or as I said, Dortmund don't qualify for the Champions League and they can't sell some of their other assets and they're in serious trouble, I just don't see why. I could see why they would want to sell, but I just can't see why Haaland would want to move.
Jan?
Yeah, just to make note that Raiola is an agent of, but he's also Alfie Haaland, his dad, who is always also the agent. And that's why one of the reasons why he always have picked teams where he can develop and take the next step. And secondly, I mean, a lot of journalists are writing this with 75 million euro, but I've been told that that clause is much higher. Oh. So, but I agree on the things that why should they do it now? There is a main reason that's coming up on Saturday, next Saturday after the international break. Then Dortmund is playing Frankfurt at home. That is a key game, and it's also a key game of Erling Haaland's future, because we all know if they don't get into the Champions League, and when you have the middle name, I love Champions League, Haaland, there will be things happening. And I think that is what Dortmund should be afraid of now, not be afraid of someone can come in and buy him for 180 million euro, because that won't happen at this kind of transfer times that we're in now.
We asked Jules, who clearly has gone to the Don Hutchinson School of Percentages, to give us an idea about where he thinks Erling Haaland will be playing at the start of next season. Jules, explain this, because you're not an idiot.
It's so bad to say that. I just said to a producer, Pete, that if we were doing the 100% for all those clubs, because I think he can play in any of those clubs, it would be like Dortmund at 40% and then right, six other at 10%, which doesn't make any sense. So let me get it. I think there's 80% chances that he stays in Dortmund for all the reasons the boys have just said. He might want to work with Marco Rose if he's good at the club. There's no rush for him to move anywhere. There's the release clause the following year. No problem. However, if he decides to leave, maybe because there's no Champions League football, maybe because he's frustrated, as we saw after the game against Cologne, maybe because Jadon Sancho is going to leave as well. I don't know, for any reasons. I think City has 60% chances of getting him because of the history between the Haaland family and Manchester City, because he might want to work with Pep Guardiola, because that's probably where he can win a quadruple, for example. There's many reasons for that. Real Madrid, 50%, because if they can get the money to pay for him, to pay the 180 million, for example, I think it's 50-50. He might choose to go there. We know Mino Raiola wants to place one of his players there, so there's a chance. You know, I think with a club like Chelsea, it's very similar idea as well, that it's 50-50. He might want to work with Tuchel. London is a good city as well. I don't believe in Barcelona so much. I put 40% because I don't think they can get the money. Manchester United, he said no already. What would he say yes now? And then finally PSG, they might only want or wish to go for him if Kylian Mbappe leaves, which again is a long shot. So I don't see this one much. I've put 20%. But for me, it's quite likely that he will stay, but in case he wants to leave, I think City will still be the favourite if they can afford him, if they have that money.
Is Jules' overcomplicated list in the right order, Jan?
I think that was a good list, and I think that the best one was with Dortmund being the favourite to keep him. First of all, they could keep him if they want to keep him, because there is no reason why should they sell him. And that's, you could say, yeah, because of money. But then if they get 100 or 80 or 90 for Sancho, maybe that is okay. The moment Dortmund's selling Alfie Haaland, they say goodbye to be a challenger, a serious top club. And also, Team Haaland could decide, even if they are fifth or sixth, to stay another year, because they've always done that to see what's best for the player. To miss out in a Champions League for one season could be okay if you're only 20 years of age. But Jules, I think that was a good list. I think you there was good arguments for your list. And the Manchester United with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, his former coach, I mean, that will be a hard one to be after Manchester City, of course.
Jan's showing a lot of democracy.
What
is that?
Yeah, I think you mean democracy, but yeah.
I want to say diplomacy was where I was going, which kind of mixed the two, which I think you kind of need as a director of football. And there has been voting going on as to who should follow Freddy Bobic at Eintracht Frankfurt. And Jan, you are way ahead of Bastian Schweinsteiger.
Is Jan interested?
Yeah.
Well, let's ask him.
Yeah, he's only won the World Cup once, so of course I'm ahead of him. But now, if I wanted to go down that road, I would have done that years ago. I was a manager of Lillestrøm, who is my club in Norway, and a Norwegian national team for two seasons. But it's nice. It's nice to be not forgotten, isn't it?
How many times have you voted for yourself, Jan?
I voted for Jonas Bolt, to be honest with you, because just to see the voting, you have to vote for someone. So that's why I did. I felt as the big brother is watching me, so I could never vote for myself, Dan.
Why do they put a young picture of Jan at the bottom in case we didn't know what he looked like? That's it. Thank you very much, guys. Of course, to keep up to date with all the latest transfer news, go over to the website and click on Transfer Talk. Diplomacy.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Norway in action today against Turkey. Both teams, of course, are winning their opening match. But in the end, this is one-way traffic right from the start. Turkey winning by 3-0. Jan, what's going on with your boys?
Well, we can't defend. We are the worst defenders in the world. I mean, unbelievable. Have a look at that set piece. You put the tallest men of Norway. We are Norwegian Vikings, and they score on a set piece. And we can't defend. We haven't done that for years. And the problem with us now at the moment is for every Haaland goal in Germany, every good game of Martin Ødegaard for Arsenal, we think that we kind of make another defender. Ståle Solbakken, our national coach today, he made a lot of changes, three changes at the back four, but we still looked all over the place. We couldn't defend anything. And a lot of respect for Turkey, as you said in your showing, they beat Holland and the Netherlands, and they beat Norway today. And today was boys against men, and we are very, very disappointed of that game. This is a home game that we played in Malaga, Spain, but I don't think it would have helped us anyway, because if you can't defend in international football, you have no chance of winning games on any level. And also, talking about Martin Ødegaard, our club, our national team captain, 22 years of age, he didn't turn up, and Erling Haaland didn't turn up. So it was a very sad game for us. We play now next week in Tuesday in Montenegro. That's just give us the slightest hope to get something out of this if this week. Or if not, Turkey will run away with it. And the Netherlands, they will always pick their points, even with De Boer as a national coach.
The Dutch picked up their first points of qualifying. Obviously, after that disappointing defeat against Turkey, they won 2-0 against Latvia to move them up to third in the table. Well, let's focus on the Dutch side now, shall we, as Milan van Dongen joins us, who was at the game, their win against Latvia. How much does that victory, after everything that's been said, after that poor performance against Turkey, somewhat silence some of the critics?
Yeah, it was a big relief because it was very bad last Wednesday against Turkey, as you mentioned, 4-2 loss. And a lot went wrong that match. There were no dynamics in the pitch. There was no it wasn't coherent. So everybody was complaining. So it was a big relief that the Netherlands won today. But yeah, it was against Latvia, which is quite a bad opponent. So yeah, it didn't say a lot, but the level of play was much higher than last Wednesday.
You mentioned inevitably everyone complaining after their defeat against Turkey. Who kind of felt the brunt of the criticism? Who was blamed the most?
Of course, the head coach, Frank de Boer. It's strange because he was a very big player for the Netherlands, one of the most, he had almost the most caps in the Dutch team. And he was very popular as well as a coach, actually, because he was quite successful at Ajax. But after after he left the Netherlands, he went to Inter, Atlanta, Crystal Palace. and all everything changed. Actually, he wasn't successful at any of those places. So it damaged his reputation a bit. And we thought it was getting better with the Dutch national team. A good tie against Italy, one win against Poland. But then again, it was the old story with Frank de Boer, who couldn't get the level of play of the Netherlands attractive. As we always want in the Netherlands, because we are in the spirit of Johan Cruyff, we want it attractive and we want results, and we didn't get a result and it wasn't attractive. So, yeah, it was bad more ways. So a bit damage repair today, but it doesn't say much against Latvia. And Tuesday we have Gibraltar. That will be a win probably as well.
You mentioned that. Things went well at Ajax for De Boer, and then obviously he left, and it's just been disaster after disaster after disaster. Why, do you think?
Because he couldn't adapt his way of managing, of coaching, which is obviously a Dutch way, which worked quite well at Ajax, four championships in 6 years. And he couldn't adapt to the way of coaching in either Italy, either England, or the United States. And that was the criticism you heard of former players of those clubs, that he wanted to implement a Dutch way of playing, of coaching, and that isn't always the good thing to do. You also have to adapt to the local rules, to say it like that. And he wasn't able to manage that good enough, and that's probably the biggest reason for the three adventures that didn't really work out. And we thought when he is in now. When he's coaching again in the Netherlands, he's used to the country, to the way of playing. So that could work out. But till now, it's not very bad, but it's neither very good.
The interesting thing, of course, the Euros just around the corner this summer. So what are the expectations amongst the fans going into that tournament?
Yeah, we aren't in the best pool with Northern Macedonia, Austria and Ukraine. We should go through to the next rounds, but we don't have big expectations. Maybe a quarterfinal or semifinal would be the best. We aren't the big favorites. We have a good defense with Matthijs de Ligt, of course, Virgil van Dijk. If he's fit at Euros, probably not. But yeah, we also have Stefan de Vrij at Inter. We have a good midfield with Wijnaldum, Frankie de Jong. But we don't have good attackers. Our best attacker is Memphis Depay. He's from Lyon. And then, we have a substitute of Sevilla and a player of Feyenoord, who are fourth in the Dutch league. So he scored a goal today, Berghuis, and Luc de Jong as well, substitute at Sevilla. But that isn't world class. So that's our big problem. Today there were for the first time since the pandemic, there were 5,000 fans in the Johan Cruyff Arena in Amsterdam, which was really nice. I was there as well. Oh, such a relief.
There must be concern, Milan. Even though it's early on, Turkey looking great. Nice win against Norway today, looking very strong. That once again, we could be looking at a World Cup without the Dutch.
No, not again. But yeah, it's a genuinely big concern. Yeah, because Turkey, they're in great form. They beat us, they beat Norway. And as you know, only the first team in the group goes directly to Qatar. So we are quite worried, yes. And we have, they beat Norway today. We have Montenegro, Latvia and Gibraltar. So they're going to win probably every match. And then it comes down to the direct confrontation in Amsterdam in September. Then we have to beat Turkey in that match. And if we don't, we're in big trouble.
Great stuff, Milan. Thank you, as always, for joining us. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thank you. Thank you.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to Amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's Amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Also in qualifying, Russia maintained their 100% start to their road to Qatar. They managed a 2-1 victory against Slovenia. Meanwhile, Slovakia could only manage a 2-2 draw at home against Malta. Malta were 2-0 up at one stage in that game. In the remaining match, Croatia beat Cyprus 1-0. Well, the games continue tomorrow. France away against Kazakhstan, England away against Albania, it's Georgia against Spain, Bulgaria against Italy. Romania, meanwhile, take on Germany. Those games available across our ESPN platforms. That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. We'll be back tomorrow, of course, for more World Cup qualifiers. But be sure to stay tuned. Extra Time is next. The boys back to answer your tweets. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Stevie with me in the studio. We've also got with us Jan in the sauna. Gab as well is with us, as is Jules. Jules, I'm assuming that you're the one who seems to be sat by a road today, because Gab's in his basement. Jan, obviously, sauna. Why can we hear all this traffic?
Sorry, because one of the windows is open. I just realised now. So.
Yes, yeah. All through the blooming show, we could hear that.
Sorry, someone should have told me.
Well, I thought it was Formula One in Bahrain.
It was Bahrain. Hamilton was going through. Okay. What would any of them do if they were in Ronaldo's position, scoring the winning goal and having the referee not allow it? Would you have thrown away the captain's armband? Stevie, was that disrespectful to your country, acting like that?
I don't think he was trying to be disrespectful to his. I think he was just looking for something to throw, and that was right. The first thing that came to his arm. It had nothing to do with what it actually was or what it symbolises.
Just something to throw.
It was the first thing he caught in his hand, so he threw it.
Yeah, would you have thrown it?
Well, I think Ronaldo should be happy that there was a Serbian player next to him. He will be suspended for 4 or 5 games, and I think that Cristiano Ronaldo has always shown us he's a very proud player for Portugal, but as Stevie said, you just look for something to get your fury out, and this time was the captain armband. There was nothing against his nation.
Gab, we talked about on the show, just brief, just succinctly, is this just money? Is that why there is no goal line technology?
Yeah, pretty much. Right. There are some countries, which, you know, smaller countries that, you know, they don't have the facilities there and to do it, and it costs too much to implement it. You'd obviously be using it just a couple times a year, and there's a global pandemic and FIFA took a major hit and people have other stuff that they want to go and spend money on.
Is it time for Ronaldo to stop taking free kicks and let his teammates have a go, Steve?
Well, the thing, it's actually gotten to the stage now where if you look at the wall that are facing them, they're all standing there looking at each other going, oh no, this is going to they're taking bets who's getting it in the face, you know, one of those. That's how bad it's got.
Where do we go with this conversation regarding Ronaldo and Portugal and free kicks and set pieces?
I think we go to Bruno Fernandes. I think that if Cristiano Ronaldo was playing for Norway, he would always get a free kick. But when you have Bruno Fernandes, imagine you're scoring all these goals for Manchester United and you come to the national team. And like Stevie said, he's done it now for ages and he can't score anymore on free kicks. So imagine that. Bruno Fernandes, could I please have a free kick? No. Okay.
That's
let's,
it.
Let's move on.
Would the coach ever have to step in, Stevie, and just
say,
oi? But then is that worth upsetting the apple cart because it's Ronaldo?
Exactly.
Well, yes, of course it is. Because at the end of the day, he can't throw his toys out the pram. He's got to understand.
He can.
And so, yeah, no, listen, the manager has to tell.
But then he loses his job.
Has to.
Go on, Jan.
No, I'm just saying that is Cristiano Ronaldo is bigger than a national coach. If the national coach went to the board and said, I have to be the first one. I have to have the pick and who will do the free kicks. And I said, no chance. It's Cristiano Ronaldo will do it. It's all about deals. It's all about everything. Can you imagine a Portuguese football team without Cristiano Ronaldo? Commercial deals will be down. Oh. He will shoot free kicks as long as he plays there.
Wow. And Gab, do you think Dybala would be a good signing for Spurs after Bale leaves?
Well, Dybala's contract, he's only going to have a year left after this one, so presumably you can get him somewhat cheaper. Juventus, like everybody else, say, well, he's not for sale. Okay, fine, but then if you don't extend his contract, you kind of have to sell him. And for the time being, with him being injured, that's not going to happen. So I think he'd be a different sort of player. I think he would help because he is a creative player. If you can get him back on track to be the player, you know, he was really right up until last season when he played a big role in Juve winning Serie A.
Do you think Klopp will bench one of the Liverpool front three for Jota if he keeps it up next season, Stephen?
Yes, I think Klopp's a guy that will, yes, show some loyalty to a player that's been good for them. But like all proper coaches and all good coaches like Klopp is, that has a certain shelf life. So then you have to make the decision.
So obviously next season, they're still in the Champions League against Real Madrid. Who's your front three?
Ooh. I would probably play Jota. I would play Salah. Mm-hmm. And I would play Mane.
Right.
Yep.
So Fabinho.
Yeah. Listen, the other thing as well is, you know, the players on the field figure it out as well. So they all understand that everybody, whilst not at their best, has a little bit of wiggle room.
Right.
Because of how well they've done. But eventually, if Klopp goes too long with somebody, the players will start figuring it out. And that would be detrimental to the team and the coach.
Jules, considering the ridiculous depth France have at centre-half, do you think Deschamps should consider trying three at the back?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. He's tried it already. I'm not sure he's really convinced by it. As you know, he's very old school in many respects, the way he approaches his games and his tactics, very conservative. And I'm not sure the back three is something that he's really keen on, even if he's tried it. And there were some good and some bad things, but I'd be tempted to have some sort of Fofana, Varane, and whoever, Koundé, whoever you want, Kimpembe, Laporte, Longley, whoever you want. But I think that would be pretty, pretty, pretty solid.
Gab, will Napoli have to sell any of their stars this summer? Could they be a proper Italian powerhouse in the near future?
Well, first and foremost, they have to sort out who their manager is going to be next year. I think that is probably what's going to stop them, above all, from becoming a powerhouse. You need to get that in place first. I think a lot's going to depend on whether they finish top four and go to the Champions League next season. No one will be the guy who always brings up money, but that is a big part of it. They spent an enormous amount of money on Osimhen. Obviously, you want to keep him, but they do have a big squad, and I think that's going to dictate how they operate in the summer.
Jules, with the merging of the Belgian League and the Eredivisie, which other countries do you think could benefit from this? Could we see, for an example, a Baltic League?
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad idea. I don't know what Jan thinks, but you could have a Scandinavian League.
Why did they ask you this, Jules? Should ask Jan.
No. I think it's good. I think MLS
Jan from the Baltics now.
I think MLS and Liga MX has to happen as well. But you could see certainly different part of Europe, and as Gab has mentioned before on our show as well, in Africa they could have a big league there too. So I think this is certainly the way forward.
A bit cold there to play, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I like the idea. We tried that some years ago, but that was after the domestic leagues. We had something called the Royal League, and we played Norway, Sweden, and Denmark, and it was the four best teams, and we played it like at the end of the season, the beginning of the next season. In sport terms, it was a big success, but it was run by people who didn't have the visions, unfortunately, but it was a quite good idea, and they developed the Norwegian game, and I think also with Sweden and Denmark, of course, Copenhagen at that time being the best team in Scandinavia helped us, inspired us, and we played Brøndby and all that. At that time, I was at Lillestrøm. So I like this idea from Belgium and Netherlands, and I agree with Jules that this could be a model that we can try somewhere else, in Europe, I think.
Here we go, everyone. Get ready. Gab, can you explain the outcomes of the financial fair play meeting on Friday? What does this mean for big clubs splurging and smaller clubs trying to stay afloat? Here we go.
He's got a column coming up. He's got a column.
Oh, well, maybe we can just read the column.
I do not have a column. Look, the one thing to bear in mind, though, is the general direction of travel, where certain clubs that are big, Andrea Agnelli said this as head of the ECA, he says, we don't want to, if we look at profit and loss, we're looking at the past, we want to look at the future. I think what they want is plans where, you know, they come in, they have projections, 3-year, 5-year projections, and they're allowed to spend more. I think the idea is right now that, you know, we're in a recession football-wise. They're going to lose, according to Agnelli, between 6 and 8 billion euros over 2 years. You don't want to discourage investment by being too conservative. Equally, at the same time, you know, you don't want to go back to what the past was, because that's when everybody was losing money and the game was spinning out of control.
Final question is for you, Gab. Why do you speak with an American accent? Can you do an Italian accent to prove that you really are Italian?
You know, it's really funny. So the very first time I went, so the reason I speak with an American accent is that I went to international schools and American schools, and I went to university and graduate school in the U.S. Ooh. But the very first time I went on radio here in England, they made a big point about, they said, oh, sorry, we thought you was Italian. Can you speak with an Italian accent? So I did it then.
Wow.
I sounded ridiculous.
Come on.
They have these awful ads here in England for this.
Can you give us some?
No,
please,
because I actually find it offensive. No. You'll know Jan and Stevie definitely, because here in England, they have these awful pasta sauces called Dolmio, and they have these ridiculous characters in the ads who all speak with these stupid, stereotypically Italian accents. I think it's downright, frankly, offensive. So, no, I'm not going to
do that. Can I say something? I say something? You have the Muppet.
No reason.
No, we have the Muppet Show, and there is a chef in the Muppet Show who runs around and says, smørbrød, 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 smørbrød. We have to live with that now for 50 years.
Yeah, he's Swedish. He's not Norwegian. He's not offending you.
We are brothers. We are brothers. We speak the same language nearly.
What is convenient, your brothers.
We say smørbrød as
they
well.
They don't like you.
I'm with Gab. You know, in this country, in America, when they have adverts, and they need a Scotsman?
Yes.
There must be thousands of Scottish actors or actresses they can go and get for the part.
Right.
Instead, they'll get somebody who's trying to put on a Scottish accent, and it's ridiculous.
Oh.
It's ridiculous.
We should get Mel Gibson. He does a great Scottish accent.
Oh, you need your freedom.
That's a great example.
You need your freedom.
Seriously. This drives me, man. I'm seeing with the Irish. The Irish must be thinking the same. They do adverts for Irish whiskey.
Right.
They get some guy to put on a false Irish accent that doesn't sound Irish at all.
Why do they do that?
I have no idea.
Oh, dear.
I wish somebody could let us know.
Oh, what?
Because they lost against Luxembourg. That's because they lost against Luxembourg.
Would you like to complain about French stereotyping, Jules, in the media?
Oh, la la.
There we go. Good.
Well, was French, wasn't
it? Did it for me, to be fair. But it's the same with French actors. You know, they love an American guy trying to put on a French accent.
Stevie, by the way, does that every time he greets Jules before the start of the show. That is it. We are done. Thank you very much. ESPN FC returns to your screens tomorrow. Obviously, a lot more World Cup qualifying to discuss.